On this week's podcast, I'm sorting through the wreckage. The market sell-off has been painful, but it's also creating opportunities, both in ink deals and in speculation. I'm going to go over what positions I've cut, what I've added to, and talk about a few new names. I'm Mike Samuels, founder and portfolio manager of Broome Street Capital, and this is According to Sources for Christmas Week 2018.
It's crossing the tape right now. Let me explain what's happening here.
Some breaking news to share with you this morning, M&A related.
There's good activism.
I think eBay is in that situation. They got a jewel in PayPal.
There's bad activism.
Unfortunately, JCPenney was a dying company.
Examples of activism gone awry.
It was not a surprise to me that that deal fell through.
Hello and welcome to According to Sources, a podcast devoted to the discussion of merger arbitrage, deal speculation, activism, and the journalists that cover and surround it all. Financial markets had their worst week in 10 years. Certain indexes like the Russell 2000 and the Nasdaq are 25% off the highs. Now, when it comes to making macro calls regarding things like the Federal Reserve or China or anything to be perceived more broad, I have my opinions, but frankly, I tend not to rely on them. It's hard enough to analyze one company or one deal or one situation. The idea of making a call on the world markets for someone such as myself feels like I'm veering very much out of my lane and out of my area of knowledge. But of course, when the market is melting down, it's going to affect all asset classes, including ink deals. We're seeing spreads blow out now, even in cash deals. If you run your own fund, particularly one that uses leverage, you're selling whatever you can to raise cash. You're selling stocks you don't want to sell, but have to sell. I first sat down on a trading desk in 2006, and I got my first pad in 2007, and I saw the tail end of a five-year bull market and then experienced the financial crisis, and I learned what the market is capable of doing. Now, why am I bringing this up? Well, if you're a trader or a fund manager between the ages of, let's say, 28 to 35, you've literally never seen this before. There's a group of money managers who are completely unprepared to deal with a sell-off like this. You know, we've had mini crises before. In October of 2014, the collapse of AbbVie Shire coincided with the collapsing oil prices, and we saw spreads blow out. I remember in particular Dresser Rand, which was being bought by Siemens, I believe for $83 in cash, and you know, midday, the day of Shire, AbbVie was trading at $79, and that was a cash deal. So I'm going to devote this podcast to sort of how I'm managing my own risk, how I'm dealing with a sell-off. I'm going to talk about some new ideas, and I'm going to talk about what I'm avoiding. First and foremost, you know, I'm of the opinion that pre-inked deal situations and activist situations, and ones that I'm talking about are like Arconic or Nielsen or Mellanox, these are going to be the last places that fund managers will go first. You know, first they're going to go to the safety names, the Procter & Gambles, the Pfizers, large tech. They're not going to speculate on deals. That's a place people go when times are good. There's also going to be a prevailing belief that financially sponsored deals are going to be on pause for a while. So I'm going to end with this. Deals, they're going to continue to happen. But in order to get defensive and preserve capital, for now, I'm only focusing on strategic deals, not ones involving private equity. Large, multi-billion-dollar public companies, they're not going to change their mind on a strategic acquisition because of a market turndown. They have a long-term vision, 5 years out, 10 years out. They have easy access to debt. And in terms of portfolio management, here's what I'm doing. I refuse to go down big and lose money in anything besides high conviction ideas. You know, it's easy in a calm market when things are good to speculate on some marginal stuff. Right now, for me, that's out the window. So I trim anything that I view as marginal. So for example, I was carrying some of this PRSC, Paul Robert Sam Charlie, that's Providence Service Corp, supposedly in talks of private equity, that position that's axed. I had some Clovis Oncology thinking that it would hire bankers in the wake of the giant premium that Tesoro got, that gets cut. I really liked Zayo Group after the Cowen report that activists in private equity were swirling, which was later backed up by Bloomberg. Listen, I still like it, but I'm less interested, again, because it's a PE deal. I don't want to be involved in anything involving a financial sponsor, so I cut that down as well. But before I get on to those higher conviction strategic ideas, I do want to get on the record with Arconic, again, of course, as ARNC, would be the biggest LBO of 2018. And the question, of course, is this deal still on or is it off? Because the stock has been just crushed. The last update on this process we got was David Faber explaining that the deal was likely to be announced in mid-December. Well, here we are, Christmas Eve tomorrow, no deal. Arconic got interesting to me when the news of Elliott stepping in to ring-fence the liabilities of the Grenfell Tower got out in the press. And here's why. Here's how I interpreted this, right or wrong. There's been two bidding groups, Apollo and then this consortium of Blackstone and Onyx. Reporting from Reuters implied that Apollo, concerned with the tower liabilities, bid $23 a share. And this was a far cry from the upper 20s number that the Arconic board was looking for originally when the strategic review was kicked off. Therefore, the act of Elliott stepping in to ring fence those liabilities implies, of course, that the 23 bid from Apollo was rejected. Elliott then, of course, steps in and invites the two bidding groups to rebid. And now in a liability-free scenario, and according to various media, the Apollo bid won out again. So when I'm assessing a deal situation and creating a risk-reward profile for Arconic, I'm basing it around the idea that the new bids were at least a dollar or two or three higher than the 23 that was rejected. Maybe it's 25, maybe it's 26. But since I believe the downside was perhaps 15, the best play, in my opinion, was the January 21 calls. That's the January 21 strike calls, which I thought were cheap at a dollar, and then 90 cents, then 75 cents, 60 cents, 45 cents, and now they are 35 cents. And I continue to buy this all the way down. I believe they closed at 35 cents, but at this point, I just refuse to throw any more bad money at them, despite the fact that I think they're insanely cheap. On its last earnings conference call, Arconic did say that its strategic review would be completed by the end of Q4. Now, originally, it was supposed to be at the end of Q3, and they extended it a quarter. So what could be happening to cause such a delay? One, the debt financing to complete this deal could be getting shaky. But to be honest, I think banks wouldn't risk souring the relationship with Apollo or Elliott for that matter. It could be that Apollo just believes that in this market, it's overpaying for Arconic and can find cheaper value elsewhere, and they got cold feet. The holdup could simply be that this is a complicated process of ring-fencing the liabilities. Reports have said that Elliott would buy the construction division from Arconic. Things always seem to take longer than they should. We saw that with AthenaHealth most recently. I think Arconic has to announce something regarding the strategic review process before 2019, even if it's to simply say that talks are still ongoing. I'll continue to hold the 21 calls just because they're too cheap to sell here, although the equity under 17 does get extremely compelling. However, I'd imagine that the stock could trade under 14 on an Arconic announcement, on Arconic announcing that it's remaining independent in this market. On a side note, I do think it's worth noting that what Elliott's doing is something rarely seen before in activism, which is buying a stake in a company, agitating for change, and then rolling this equity into the PE takeover. And we've now seen this with GIMO, with Athena, and now apparently they are attempting to do this in Arconic. And why is this significant? Well, it's significant because it shoots down the age-old argument that public companies have that activists are simply renters. They're in a stock for a quick dollar, but they fail to have long-term vision. And yes, we have seen Carl Icahn dabble in this strategy most recently when he bought the refiner CVR Energy, but it's a pivot for Elliott that gives further credibility to their activist campaigns, essentially stating, not only are we agitating for change, but we're in this for the long haul as well. So that's my thoughts on Elliott. That's my thoughts on Arconic. Moving on, if you're like myself and you've just lost 10% of your money in a very short amount of time, the instinct is to make it back quickly. But I think it's important to step back and realize that some extremely safe deal spreads are out there right now. And while they're not home runs, they seem to me like no-brainers to put on. And the first one is Tesoro. And this is TSRO. The biotech and maker of PARP inhibitors is being bought by GlaxoSmithKline for $75 a share. The spread was extremely tight until the merger documents revealed that there really wasn't any sort of competing bidding process, that it was really Glaxo simply bidding against themselves. Now, add in a market meltdown last week, and there's currently almost 3.25 gross spread in a deal that can close in 3 weeks. And that is a 38% annualized return on a deal with Glaxo as a buyer. Now, I'm not blind to the fact that biotech spreads are always wider than any others because of the perceived risk that a drug could, you know, suddenly get pulled or cause a death in a patient or a trial can go badly. But in the case of Tesoro, A, the product is already approved. B, the bear thesis in the stock was always that the drug just wouldn't sell and not a pivotal phase 3 study. And on top of that, the competing drugs in the space, one is owned by Clovis Oncology and the other is owned by AstraZeneca, are already approved, which further validates the safety profile of PARP inhibitors in general. So that's deal spread number one. Number two is IDTI, Integrated Device Tech. They got Chinese approval on Friday, and now only CFIUS approval remains. And as Japan is an ally, and with the U.S. already in the grips of a Chinese trade dispute that seems to have no resolution in sight, I can't imagine CFIUS blocking this deal. Deal price, as a reminder, is $49. There's 71 cents left. Annualized return there of 17.6% if the deal closes in the next month, and I think it does. And the last one is Shire, SHPG. Again, there's 2 weeks left, and there's still 2% left in this massive deal, which is honestly shocking. I've been buying Shire here unhedged at times, and to be honest, part of me thinks once this closes, the combined company stock price has a very good chance of taking off. And I know this isn't merger arb, this is more speculation, but the sheer amount of hedging and deal hating has capped this for so long, it's essentially had this 1,000-pound weight around its neck for the last 6 months. And the closing of this deal, I think, could potentially free Takeda to rally quite quickly. And the stocks, furthermore, that have held up best over this giant market sell-off have been Big Pharma. And I think it falls in that category. So those are the ink deals I find most compelling. In terms of speculation, you know, I mentioned that I do own the January 21 calls in Arconic. I own a lot of them. But I'm going to touch on three other names I'm involved in. The first is Barnes & Noble's. This is a name I devoted a full podcast to in October, as I think the value proposition is incredible if the holiday sales can comp positively. Now, my average in this name sits quite a bit higher at this point, around 650. On Monday, which feels like a lifetime ago, Craig Hallam upgraded the shares. And here are the highlights of the call. He said, one, the new TV ad campaign appears to be working as Google searches for Barnes & Nobles are up year over year for the first time in all of 2018. Number two, the number of retail jobs advertise on the Barnes & Noble website has been up year over year in both November and December versus significant declines in 2017. And number three, the point of sale data from SpendTrend, which is a division of First Data. SpendTrend analyzes sales data from over 4 million merchants and bookstores as a whole, not specific to Barnes & Nobles, had a very strong November. We don't know December yet. So I'm going to quote the piece here. Quote, positive holiday results would not only benefit near-term results, but likely increase the likelihood of a favorable transaction being completed. Our thoughts remain consistent. A takeout premium for BKS could be substantial. A peer enterprise value to EBITDA multiple on our conservative estimates would suggest potential for $10 a share. Now, you're going to get another 15-cent dividend from BKS January 4th, and the holiday sales update, I believe, will be on the 4th as well or sometime around then. If the comps are good, I'd imagine we could see a deal by the end of March. And in fact, in addition to the common stock I own, I was buying the March $6 calls last week. So does BKS have more potential to be a private equity deal or a strategic deal? Well, I think it can be either. You know, Leonard Riggio has already said he will participate in the bidding process. When BKS announced it was forming a special committee to explore the sale in October, it did say it received indications of interest from both financial sponsors and a publicly traded company. So I am still there, BKS. Am I worried? Of course, I'm worried about everything right now, but I do have high conviction in the idea. Number two situation that I think is very interesting is Mellanox. This is MLNX. On November 25th, CNBC's Alex Sherman reported that Mellanox had hired financial sponsors to explore a sale. Other media had clarified later that Mellanox, in fact, hired JP Morgan. On November 7th, Sherman again wrote a second article that Xilinx was working with Barclays to acquire Mellanox, and the article added two details. Number one, that the deal could be for over $100 a share, and two, that it would be announced in December. Now, last week, the Israeli paper The Marker wrote an article saying the acquisition of Mellanox could be delayed because Microsoft has thrown its hat in the ring in the Mellanox auction. It should be noted that Microsoft is one of Mellanox's biggest customers. So what have the analysts been saying? Well, on December 3rd, Jefferies wrote the following. We increasingly see the company as, quote, an arms merchant to the public cloud providers fighting for a high-stakes game of the IaaS business. With the emergence of programmable smart NIC applications, our impression of Mellanox's total addressable market and the strategic nature of this business are getting bigger. We're raising our price target to $130 a share. And that's as a standalone. Later in the note, and again, this is from December 3rd, before any media news of Microsoft interest was out there, they wrote, quote, bigger ramifications for the market and Mellanox. Stated alternatively, we could say that offloading is fundamental to Microsoft's Azure's competitiveness in the public cloud IaaS market. That's a big deal in our view. Any public cloud provider that enables workloads to run with lower latency and lower cost will take share in this market. We believe that other public cloud providers see the CPU versus offloading debate the same way as Microsoft. We believe that Amazon, for example, purchased privately held Annapurna Labs for the same reason. Given the opportunity at hand, we think that Mellanox is in a very strategic and advantageous position in this market. They have a $130 target as a standalone value. But again, the world looked very different only a few weeks ago. In many ways, this is a dream scenario for me. A small chip company, market cap $4.6 billion as of Friday, has two giant strategic companies vying for it. So where could we go wrong? Number one, Alex Sherman's M&A coverage since joining CNBC has been spotty. Think Juniper, think Maxim. But he did recently break the Aris CommScope news. Second source, which is The Marker, also has a bit of a hit-and-miss record. That said, they were the first to report on Intel's acquisition of Mobileye a few years back, and then more recently, KLA Tencor's purchase of Orbotech. Before they did that, though, they had several misleading articles on SodaStream before they were eventually bought by Pepsi. However, I think it's important. Neither Xilinx, nor Mellanox, nor Microsoft has issued any sort of denial to the media coverage. And I think, had the market not imploded last week, Mellanox would be closer to 98 than 87. The market, I think, is giving us a gift here. I'll continue to accumulate Mellanox if the market sell-off continues. And it's possibly the best strategic situation since IDTI. Okay, so now I'm going to end with a lotto ticket here. And again, this goes with the theme of strategic deals. And the last company I'm going to talk about is called MDC Partners. And the ticker here is MDCA, Michael Dog, Charlie Apple. MDC is a collection of well-known creative advertising agencies, including Crispin Porter, 72andSunny, and BDO. The story starts in April of 2016, when shares were trading north of $23 a share. Gotham City Research wrote a short report on MDC claiming the following, quote, shares are worth less than a dollar a share, which at the time was 96% downside. They said, MDC will restate several years of historical results as a result of issues covered in this report and elsewhere. Summaries of findings of 2015 organic revenue is 1.5%, not 7.2% as reported. Organic growth is well below industry averages. MDC's true debt is understated by $300 million or 23%. And then they end with at least 42 to 53% of reported profits are suspect. And that's when the stock was $23 a share. Well, today shares are trading at $2.62. And much of the Gotham City's work has proven to be true. And while MDC's market cap is small at only $150 million, its enterprise value is $1.3 billion, as it has nearly $1 billion in debt. Front 4 Capital, and this is an activist hedge fund that focuses on smaller companies, has been aggravating for a sale. The company's CEO stepped down in September. And then in December 5th, and this is the most important part, Adweek, an industry publication, wrote the following, quote, international global management consultant Accenture is reportedly among a small group of bidders seeking to acquire ad agency network MDC Partners and its 50-plus properties around the world. According to a source with direct knowledge of the matter, the deadline for bids was late November. The same source said Accenture is one of the three finalists. A source close to MDC echoed these thoughts and told Adweek that the bids were almost certainly for the entirety of the company, with the understanding that its final buyer would then go through a round of pruning to streamline the network. A party close to MDC called Accenture, quote, the best bidder, citing, quote, synergies with the agency network and its proven ability to cut costs, end quote. So I own a bit of this, but I need to stress situations like these where the debt-to-equity ratio is skewed can lead to a large range of outcomes. You could tell me this could be bought for a dollar. You could tell me this could be bought for $10, and neither would surprise me. The only reason I'm in it is because Accenture, the $88 billion company, is the listed buyer. And I think it's an interesting lotto ticket. I think the timing seems to be fairly imminent. As I said, the bids were due at the end of November. But again, I reiterate, I'm staying very small in this name. So to conclude today, I'm weathering the storm just like everyone else right now. This isn't easy, but I'm not going to lose big money and marginal ideas or anything involving private equity with the exception of Arconic. I like Tesoro, IDTI, and Shire for ink deals, Barnes & Noble's, Mellanox, and I have a little MDCA for a flyer. This is going to be my last podcast for 2018. Happy holidays and Happy New Year. I'll see you in 2019.